Hey, Fedheads. Welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is episode 71, Nomad Connecticut and Whiskey. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. We are broadcast live around the world and picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in wherever you are in the world. Hope you're staying safe and enjoying a cigar. We're, of course, picked up on podcasts, so if you have any device that connects to the internet in any way, shape, or form, whatever podcast catcher you use, you can hear our show. More about that later in the show. I am, of course, joined, as always, by my co-host, Robbie Rass. Rob, what's going on, brother?
Well, you know, things are great, man. Things are great. It's hot as Hades out here in California. We topped out at 101 today.
Ooh, gotta take care of that knot, bro.
Yeah, it's... take care of the knot, exactly. Gross. Yeah, it's toasty, but there's a nice breeze today, so it's not too bad. And it's going to peak out on Saturday when I'm up in Sonora building a fence in my mother-in-law's backyard. So that's going to be nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But, no, it's good, man. Things are good. Work's good. The Giants are on the road. They're winning baseball games. So we've got a great cigar today. And thanks to you, I am going to enjoy three fantastic, all Japanese whiskeys. Kind of unintentional, but I'm excited about it.
I think you're turning Japanese, and I mean, I think this is probably the best cigar to have done that for. I think, and it's been so long, I'm actually going to have to look on the site and see what we rated this. It's been so long since I've had a Connecticut Forte. I've forgotten just how good it is and why I went nuts over it the first time. I mean, sitting here, I'm already like an inch and a half in, and I'm like, why don't I have a box of these? I really need to have a box of these. So, yeah, got to get my hands on some more of these.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have to look up. I don't think I was involved in the review when we did it last time, but we'll take a look here and pull it up.
Which is weird because you're a huge Connecticut fan.
I do like the Connecticuts. I actually just posted today a review, and this I'll explain to you why I'm bringing this up. A review of the La Galera Connecticut from Indian Head.
Now, I heard that's good.
That was a really good Connecticut. It's it was actually kind of unique in the flavor profile, but the flavors didn't really start to kick off until the final third, which was a bit of a bummer. But I enjoyed it, and the price point was really low on that thing for the Robusta was like $4.50 or something like that.
Oh wow!
So that I gave that an 89, and that's a five pack. It's a high five pack purchase on our scoring system. Now the price did influence that a little bit, but to bring it back to the Connecticut Fuerte. Which, I mean, I love when a cigar has a perfect burn like that, you know?
Right.
It's just freaking perfect. But to bring it back to the Fuerte is a vastly superior Connecticut blend. So this would, if I were doing the scoring, and maybe we'll have to revisit it because it's been a while, this would definitely be in the low 90s for me.
Yeah, so. I feel like this this Connecticut Fuerte, again, I think about our scoring method, it would be a box split, but my personal feeling on this is like, I need a box of this. Like I can't, like a box split wouldn't be enough. Like, I don't know why I don't have more of these. It's, I think it just came out at a time when there's so much going on for cigars. I had so many cigars to focus on. I enjoyed it. I moved on. Quick little bit about the Connecticut Fuerte, which of course you can find more information at nomadcigarcompany.com. I'm smoking the Corona, which is a 5.5x44. You know I love the Coronas. This was actually made in the Dominican Republic. So this kind of goes back to some of Fred's blends in Nicaragua and Estelí, some of them made in Dominican. This has got an Ecuadorian Connecticut wrapper. It's got an Ecuadorian Habano binder, which is, I think, where a little bit of that body, that spice is coming from. And then he did a combination of Dominican Republic filler and Nicaraguan filler. And the Nicaraguan filler, of course, and the Dominican filler that he chose, you know, he upped the body of it, and it's delicious. I mean, this is like perfectly in my wheelhouse. 100 all day, twice on Sundays.
I went back and looked. You posted a review in January of 2015, so about a year and a half ago, and you reviewed the Lancero, which I have not had it in a Lancero, and you gave it an 88. So that was
what's wrong with me?
That was a five pack purchase for you in that one. But there may have been another review because that's not a very standard size.
No,
we've got that's the only review that I see here.
I might have to do a redux of this Corona because this like I said, I'm only like in the first third, and I'm already like, I need a box of these. And usually that only happens when I smoke something that's amazing. And maybe it's a, you know, it's a time thing. These have just gotten even better and over time, or maybe I just forgotten how good the original blend was. But, you know, to me, this is probably top five Connecticuts on the market today. Bold statement, I know.
Yeah, yeah. There's some cigars that we forget to take into account when we say that, like the and this is not what the show's about, but the first cigar, when everybody says this is one of the best Connecticuts I've had, I always go back to the Casada 40th, the Corona Classica.
Oh yeah.
Now that is probably the best Connecticut on the market, but I just don't think of it in those terms for some reason. Just because it doesn't have Connecticut in the title, maybe that's why. I don't know.
Yeah.
But at any rate, this is a fantastic cigar. We've talked about it a lot. Had Fred on the show a couple of times. This is the Nomad Therapy Connecticut is a strong cigar as well. It's not the same as this. This has, you know, significantly more body, a lot more structure to it, I think, than really with most Connecticuts. But that one's, I think, more of a traditional style Connecticut, in my opinion. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. So, let's get cracking, because, you know, I love whiskey and I've been on the road for 8 days, and boy, could I use a drink. Drink responsibly. So, I'm not sure if I've had the Batch 46 Aberlaron before. I know I've had the Batch 37, which is like a little sherry bomb. The Batch 46 is very different. It's got a lot more of the bourbon influence, so you've still got some really great spicy notes in it, but it's not a sherry bomb. And I didn't want a sherry bomb because I know this Connecticut Fuerte is, it's not delicate per se, but I didn't want to run it over with something that was huge. So you can see there's the Abunda, and its cask strength, it's 60.4%. which it's a heater, and single cask, Spanish Oloroso, sherry butts. So there you go. It had no bourbon influence. I don't know what I'm talking about. But I'm positive that they've added in some Aberlour that was done in bourbon, because I know when I did these side-by-side, it was obvious that this did not have the same strong sherry character as the Batch 37. I think that's been the case for a lot of the Aberlours. Over time, as Spanish casks get more expensive, there's just going to be less influence on the whiskey because they're going to use them less. They're just too expensive. A little bit about Aberlour. Speyside Distillery, their neighbors are McCallan and Craigellachie. I'm sure I said that wrong. They were founded in 1879. They're running two wash stills, two spirit stills, producing 3.5 million liters of alcohol, 924,000 freedom gallons. Don't forget those freedom gallons. And its cask strength, as I said, and above all, no chill filtration, so they're not filtering out all the proteins and gunk and whatnot, which kind of gives the whiskey its character. When I smell it, it's just like an orange, spicy. It's like orange meets sherry, and it's just a spice bomb. And it and as I mentioned before the show started, I kind of choked on the whiskey because it was just I'm not acclimated right now. My taste bud's not prepared for cask strength, and I took it and just drank it like it was normal. And yeah, it was a lot.
That fire water, that hits you pretty hard pregame. I'll jump in while you start sipping on that with my first pairing here. And I did leave the window open. Now I don't have a fancy bottle. This the whiskey itself has a fancy bottle, but this is how I got it. In this tiny little bottle that John was nice enough to bring to me. And this is the Ichiro MRW. And the MRW stands for Mizunara. Mizunara Wood Reserve. And the Mizunara Wood is Japanese oak. So I'll give a little bit of information, then John, you can go on the backstory of this. And actually, The bottle really is actually quite nice looking. I'm looking here at the Master of Malt website, which we linked to just because it's got a little bit of information. This was bottled in 2010. It was crafted by Ichiro Akuto. Akuto?
Akato?
It's A-K-U-T-O.
Oh, Akuto, yeah.
Akuto. This is a vatting of various single malts, which have been aged in Japanese Missouri oak. It's an incredible whiskey with loads of character from the Japanese oak. Not a lot of information, but they give you a little bit. The nose is kind of honey. They say honey and toasty, sweet and light citrus. Definitely getting that citrus on the nose. a lot of honey. Kind of a sweet, sweet kind of, I don't know, fruit and sugar bowl, really.
Yeah.
And it's, so far, it's been, I've been cheating a little bit. It is quite tasty. And this is, I mean, so this is a blended whiskey.
Yeah.
This isn't a single malt. So I kind of went off the rails a little bit because I wasn't exactly sure what I was choosing. I know when if I go, the single malts that are in my bar, it's all the same stuff that I feature on the show several times. So since John gave me all this stuff, I figured I'd put it to use. So the Ichiro MRW, and I know, John, you've got a lot more background info on this one.
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy that founded the Chichibu Distillery, and of course we've talked, I think if you took all the amount of time that we've talked about the Chichibu Distillery, you could fill an entire show with just Chichibu quotes. That was the Chichibu the Peated. Mm-hmm. Of course, our good friend Victor Victali picked up a bottle, sort of validated what we said about, you know, how good it was. He was blown away as well. So this is a vatting of presumably a couple different distilleries. The guess, because they don't tell you, so the guess is it's probably some Chichibu stuff, maybe some Chichibu stuff, like some really young two-year Chichibu stuff or one-year Chichibu stuff, some Hanyu stuff, and who knows what else. But the thing with the Mizunara wood is that it's extremely porous, and the tighter the wood, the better technically it is for whiskey, because the whiskey can sit in it for a really long time and not become over saturated or over influenced by the wood. With a Mizunara, you get a ton of character really fast, but what's cool about that is that Mizunara wood imparts a whole ton of flavors that you just don't get out of French oak, European oak, or American oak. I've come to really enjoy Mizunara wood, and I think there's a distillery, and I want to say it's like Dalmore, that actually has bought up a bunch of Mizunara casks, and they're going to start doing some Scottish whiskey in finishing it in Mizunara, which I think is really cool because it's, like I said, it's just got an interesting character to it.
Yeah, this is an interesting whiskey. Now, I'm not a whiskey expert by any means. That's John's the resident whiskey expert. This has some really unique characteristics to it. Now, like I said, on the nose, it's got that sweetness, and it's got some citrusy notes. And there's some like woody notes in there as well. I know that's kind of not a very good descriptor. But on the tongue, I get like mango and passion fruit, like kind of a tropical fruit, but not very astringent, like a pineapple or a grapefruit or anything like that. But it's more sweet fruit, or even like a honeydew melon might even be a better way and a more relatable way to say it. That's kind of the main flavor that I'm getting. And there's some spice on there as well. And there is one comment here that's on the finish. It's abrupt, but very spicy and sweet. And it really does, each kind of taste ends with kind of an abrupt spike in spice, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
It's got a really, really quick finish. I wouldn't call it dry, but it's quick.
Yeah.
And it's very, very good. The thing that's going on here with this pairing, though, is they're very separate. It's almost like the finish is so quick that by the time I'm going to take a sip or take a puff on the cigar, the flavors are gone.
Interesting.
So I'm not getting much play in the flavors, but I did take some sips of this before I started smoking the cigar, and I smoked the cigar on its own. They don't seem to be impacting each other really at all, which is kind of unique.
Well, talking about the Abalur pairing here, as you can see, I mean, it's got that rich, rich red
smell. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just so dark. I'm having the exact opposite experience that you are. This Abalur, I mean, I should have known. I for some reason in my head, I thought it had less sherry influence, but it's just it's too much sherry for the cigar. I mean, it just dominates your palate. All you can taste afterwards is that spicy sherry, which I like, but it's just not the right pairing for the cigar. Now, that said, it's interesting because it's kind of taken away the spiciness in the cigar, and I'm getting all of these notes out of the cigar that I don't normally get. So I get like this really sort of Dominican, you know, like Paloto Capano tobacco, where it's got that really, it's got like so many layers that you kind of have to go through when you're tasting it, and I'm getting that out of this cigar. And I don't know what kind of Dominican filler is using in it, but I just get more of the tobacco influence, and I get a lot more of the Connecticut sweetness, and all that spice is just right run over by the whiskey. So it's interesting. I mean, it is. I think it's interesting because it brings out different things out of the cigar, but it's not the ideal pairing because we're talking about way different opposite ends of the spectrum for strength comparison here.
Yeah, from the cigar, I'm getting lots of sweetness, almost kind of an almond sweetness is coming out of it with a little bit of a nougaty note in there. Definitely a creamy profile, but there's a little bit of a kick on the end. And I think that's what's unique about this pairing that I've got here, I think, is they both kind of spike at the end and then stop. Because even the finish on the Connecticut Fuerte doesn't linger very long.
Yeah, it's very, very clean.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting pairing of those of two things that are kind of doing the exact same thing. They're starting out sweet, they end with that spicy clip, and then that's it. So it's, as far as the pairing is concerned, I don't think it's they're helping each other, but they're not hurting each other either. If that makes sense. So
in the room there, Jeff was pairing a Mombacho Tierra Volcan, which we both love, but he's pairing with a Lapsang Souchong, which is a tea that's got it's out of China and it's got a ton of peaty quality to it. Logan hates it. Like, Logan just despises it, which doesn't surprise me because I'm pretty sure Logan hates peaty whiskey. But just a reminder to the audience that you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 71, Nomad Connecticut and Whiskey. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We're heard around the world. And we're, of course, heard on podcasts. Now, right now, we've got a great podcast thing going on right now. We've been nominated for the Podcast Awards. You can go to Cigar Federation, right on our main page on the left-hand side. We've got a link there. Appreciate your support. Appreciate your vote. Voting takes place daily, and we need those votes in to keep us in the contention here. We're very happy just to be nominated, but boy, it sure feels good to win.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're in a unique category. There's actually a podcast, and I'm not a big gamer guy of like video games or role playing games or anything like that. There's a podcast that we're up against called D&D is for Nerds, and that's also nominated for the People's Choice Award. So
yeah, I've heard that's a really good podcast.
Yeah, I think we're fighting an uphill battle, but like I said, every vote counts. So hopefully, we can overcome the nerds, and I say that as an endearing term. Because, I actually did play Dungeons & Dragons a couple of times as a kid, like 12, 13 years old. But I never really got into it. I always liked the idea, but I was never really around people who wanted to play, so I never quite got into it. But anyway... Yeah, no, definitely. You can vote once a day. I think voting is going through June 12th, so it's a long time to vote. But, yeah, like I said, every vote counts, so we appreciate it.
There you go. So moving on to my second pairing, which I probably should add maybe as my first pairing, going with another offering from the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, which I've not sent to you, and maybe I should. So this means nothing to most of our audience. This is a 77.30, which is how the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society... tags all their bottles, because they can't call it what the distillery is, because it's not being bottled at the distillery. They're just going through the distillery and buying a single cask, so it's not, you know, a combination of different casks from that distillery that they make as a final product, not being bottled at the distillery. They just kind of go through and find something that's interesting and unique or whatever, and then they bottle it. And this is really cool. So this is, they call it attractively accessible and mouth-watering. Now, because we're Scotch nerds, we can decode that, because there's a big chart, and this is from Glen Ord. I'm sure no one's ever heard of that distillery, because I'd never heard of that distillery either. You have to be a huge whiskey nerd. What's weird about that, though, is that Glen Ord is a Northern Highlands distillery. They're located north of Inverness. They were founded in 1838, so they go back a long ways, like a lot of Scottish distilleries. They use the Nan Bonach as their water source, which are two locks that are around that area. And they have three wash, three spirit stills, and they produce a whopping 5 million liters of spirit a year, which is a lot. So that's 1.32 million freedom gallons. That's a lot of spirit. And they're actually they've actually got expansion plans, which they should have finished by now, to expand to 12 stills and 20 washbacks. So, I mean, that's an enormous expansion. So they're obviously ramping up. Presumably, I'm assuming that a lot of this is used in blended spirit. But regardless, cask strength, because all the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society stuff is cask strength. And this comes in, wait for it, at a whopping... Boy, I kind of... There we go. Let me try that again. This comes in at a whopping 61.9% ABV.
Hey-o!
And this is made from a ex-bourbon refill hogshead cask. So kind of probably going to be perfect for this cigar, because bourbon, you know, has the nice fruity notes, a little bit of spice, but it's not in the same category as bourbon. Oh, I'm getting just tons of, like, heather. It's almost like cotton candy and heather on the nose. I mean, just amazing. incredible. I'm going to read the tasting notes because most of these are way over my head. But they say it's an attractive nose brimming with barley sugars. I would agree with that. Fondants. So that's, yeah, I get that. And shortbread. Added interest from fresh linen, pear sorbet, and orange zest. And water, if you add it, brings out some mango, lime, and daffodil stems. It is an easy drinking, mouth-watering palate with stewed apples, pineapple tarts, toffee tablet, and sherbet fizz. So that all sounds great. I'm going to take some sips here while you talk about your second pairing.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I neglected to mention, excuse me, about my first pairing there, the Ichiro's, the MWR, well, that's 46% ABV. I didn't mention that. So that was one thing I didn't mention. Second pairing here, and while you were talking, I took my first sip, and I don't know if people can, while they're watching the show, if they can see the little square that's got my picture in it down at the bottom.
Did you make a face?
But I had this, I had a very visual reaction to this, to say the least. This is the Megikyo 15 year, and again, in my beautiful little sample bottle here from John. This is quite good. Mm-hmm. I'll go from my first flavor here. That's 45% ABV. The nose is rich, very, very rich, with some caramel. There's a little bit of vanilla, and there's also like a stewed fruit, but it's not the same. Usually when I talk about stewed fruit, I'm talking about like cherries or like plums or something, like a red flesh fruit. This is more like an apricot or something like that, but you might even like a golden apple, but it's just really, really interesting on the nose. The flavor is impressive. There is a ton of freaking flavor. I've already had, you know, one whiskey, and I've smoked a third of a cigar, and for some reason my palate still feels really, really clean, which is kind of awesome. It's just kind of exploded. There's so much flavor happening in here. What they say about it is it's the most elaborate single malt bottling from Megikyo Distillery. Elaborate is a good way to put it. This 15-year version offers a richer, rounder texture with beautiful, noble oak aromatics of caramel, chocolate. I don't get much chocolate. And sweet spices. Intense and generous. This is a whiskey to enjoy at the end of the evening and provides a wonderful match for a fine cigar. So look at that.
Nice.
But yeah, give us some more of the background on this one, John.
Well, so they're in the giant sort of stable, as it were, of the Nicawiska Company, which started out as Suntory. They were all founded by Masataka Takatsuro, who is really the father of everything whiskey in Japan. He built the first whiskey distillery. He's got a really fascinating story if people want to read up on him. He essentially went over to Scotland and was like obsessive about writing down everything there was about whiskey, because he just wanted to make sure that the whiskey was as exact possible reproduction of Scottish whiskey. And whiskey in Japan, for those who aren't aware, really after the First World War, whiskey consumption in the Japan was enormous, and actually continues to this day. They're just a huge consumer of whiskey. They love whiskey, and so, you know, they treat their whiskey with a lot of respect. They do a lot of traditional methods, even though, you know, Japan, of course, being really known for modernization, they approach the whiskey with this just really old world methods, and I think it comes through in the whiskey. For me, I have both the Megikyo 12 and the 15, and normally, when I have like a 12 and a 15 from a distillery, or a 15 and a 17, I mean, there'll be some differences, but I mean, they're both, you can tell they're sort of from the same distillery. The 12 and the 15 and the Megikyo are completely different beverages. The 12 is excellent, but in a different way. The 15 is, you know, like, it's just like a sorbet of fresh, bright fruit. Like, it's so clean and so delicious. Yeah, I'm glad I had the opportunity to share it with you, because it's so good.
Yeah, I'm already looking up how much it's going to cost me to get a bottle. And I did a quick Google search here. And you know, with Google, they'll give you like shop for Megikyo 15 years on Google.
Yeah.
And they have it at this website or something called Decante, Dekanta, with like the whatever that is. Like, I think that means it's a hard A, or it's Decanta probably. but they have it listed as like $615.
That
so
seems excessive.
It does. So I'm thinking that is some sort of, there needs to be some sort of conversion there.
Yeah, for much less, I'm sure I could buy or import a bottle here and bring it down with me.
Yeah, we might have to make that happen because this is fan-flippin-tastic. I looked at the chat room in Cigar Federation, and no one could see my reaction, which is unfortunate. It is very, very good. It's the website here that I pulled up on Master of Malt, the way they described it is kind of perfect. It's malty. There's a kind of a malty backbone. It's toffee and generically fruity, which is kind of, I guess, what I was saying before. And they say it's a great session dram. It's not too heavy, and it's very pleasing. This is really, really freaking good. And the pairing is, it's bringing out some interesting notes in the cigar. We're getting a lot more spice out of the Connecticut Forte than I was earlier. So that's actually going really, really nice because it's got kind of a spicy little, hot little finish on it. Mm. It's got that maltiness, and there's that sweet, full-bodied flavor. And then it's got that little spike at the end. And again, leaves the palate very, very clean to pair with. I feel like this would pair really, really well with most Cuban cigars. Like the general style Cuban cigars. I mean, you would know that better than I would. But like I'm thinking if I had just, and what the average American thinks of as a Cuban cigar, just a Monte Cristo, I think I'd be pretty damn happy with that. But the pairing here is really, really nice. It's impacting the cigar just enough to bring out some nuance that I know is in there, and I wasn't tasting it before. A little bit more spice, probably a little bit more body on the cigar just in general. Very, very nice pairing.
As hey there.
John,
yeah, that's my bad.
I
pulled a Rob.
No, that was my fault. I should have kept talking, but go ahead.
It's all good. So talking about this Glenord, this is going really well. Although what's interesting is, and I think just as a matter of the ABV of this Glenord, it's got a bit of a hot finish. So it's a bit peppery, but the body of this whiskey is just, I mean, for a 9-year-old whiskey, amazing. Like it really presents like a 15-year-old whiskey, and it goes really well with the Connecticut. It's about the same sort of strength level as this Connecticut, which the Nomad Connecticut Fuerte, which is nice. So they're kind of playing off of each other. And again, I think the whiskey is drawing out all of these nuanced flavors without running them over, and I'm in my happy place. This is really good. I could see this Nomad going with a lot of different Japanese whiskeys because I feel like Japanese whiskey is a little bit more delicate, and I think cask strength, even though I've gone cask strength for 2 out of my 3 whiskeys, probably not the best choice. Cask strength whiskey is just going to have way too much body for this cigar. You're going to lose a lot of the nuances. But I'm going to hop into an audience question before we take our next station break here. And I'll just take them from the top. Jeff Madre. Jeff, you're always asking questions of the show. We appreciate your support. And Jeff wants to know, how does the creaminess of the Connecticut wrapper complementing the whiskey? And I would say, I think for me, what's nice about Fred's Connecticut is that it isn't, and I don't want to slam Connecticut's because they're one of the top selling cigars in North America. Like Connecticut is like, I think, the number 2 selling type of cigar. But I find traditional Connecticut's just to be a bit boring. I want a little more out of them. I mean, yeah, I'll have a bunch with coffee and that's great, but they're really easy and I want a little bit more there to think on. And I think the reason that this blend blew us away is because, you know, and again, it's not a spice bomb. It's just got more body. You took a Connecticut and you just gave it more character. And for me, you know, the creaminess is there for sure, but there's all these underlying notes. And to me, that's what makes this an interesting cigar for pairing. What about you, Rob?
Oh, I actually turned my camera off there for a second. Oops. yeah, I would agree 100%. And I'm going to continue to wax on about this Magikyo pairing here. It keeps getting better. There's and it's funny how Jeff mentioned the creaminess of the wrapper and the creaminess in general that you're going to get from Connecticut's. That creaminess is carrying over, so I feel like it's constantly on my palate. Like I haven't taken a sip or a puff here in, you know, about a minute or so, and I still taste that creaminess. It's not palate coating as some flavors can be when they linger like that, but it's just there. And, you know, I smack my lips or something like that, or, you know, you just taste it just enough to remind you that, wow, this is a really good pairing and I want to go back and do it over again. And I think you nailed it earlier when you said that most Japanese whiskeys would go really well with this particular cigar, probably Connecticut's in general. And, you know, maybe there's a reason for that. I know that cigars are relatively popular in Japan and in that area of the world, so maybe that has something to do with it. But yeah, this, just trying to think on some of the Connecticuts I've smoked lately, especially the La Galera that I reviewed today, I think that would pair really, really nicely. Like you said, though, the nice thing about this particular cigar is it's got just a little bit more body, and that's actually intensified by, the flavors that I'm getting, especially from this Mukihio, but it was intensified from the Ichiro as well. Just a little bit more body that I think the modern palate is always looking for. So Definitely two things playing to each other's strengths.
So just remind our audience to tune into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 71, Nomad Connecticut and Whiskey. I'm your host, John, the Cigar Surgeon, here with my co-host, Robbie Rass. Just a reminder, thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. We know you guys are out there in droves, and thanks very much for your support. We appreciate it. Hope we're keeping you entertained wherever you're stationed in the world, bored out of your mind, or not.
And if you have a chance, don't forget to vote.
Make sure to vote. We need your support.
Podcastawards.com.
Podcastawards.com. If you go to CigarFederation.com, we've got a direct link with the information on the left-hand side. You can't miss it. We appreciate your support. I know it's a long voting period, but we're in it to win it. So moving on, before we get into our last pairing, Jeff actually has a follow-up question, which I think kind of leads perfectly into your trailing statement when we're talking about the creaminess of the Connecticut. He says, what's the major differences between Scotch whiskey and Japanese whiskey, and which one do you think pairs better with the Fuerte? I'll kind of let you take – I'm assuming you probably want to handle the last half of that question first.
Well, I'll just answer the question in general. I mean, for me, and this is just from – this is a very layman answer – the big difference between Japanese whiskey and Scottish whiskey, Scotch, for me, is the peat. Because there's very little peat to no peat in these, unless you get something that's peated, like Ichiro's peated, which was very good. That's the big difference. And, I mean, that's like the Captain Obvious difference. I'll let John speak on the rest of the stuff. What was the second half of the question?
You want to know which one you think pairs better, Scotch or Japanese whiskey?
Oh, it's not no contest. Yeah, it's – well, okay. Yeah, I would say in general probably Japanese whiskey, because I feel like you could grab just about any Japanese whiskey and it's going to pair well with this. Now, my experience with Japanese whiskey is limited, but I mean, unless you're going with something that you know is cask strength or you know is peated, which you're going to know, then it's going to pair really, really well. But there's a lot of Scottish whiskeys out there that are going to pair really, really well. When I always go back to Glenmorangie. I feel like just about anything from Glenmorangie is going to pair really well with this. I had a bottle of Glenroth's? Is that how you say it?
Glenroth's, yeah.
They have the short fat bottles, you know.
Yep.
I had a bottle of that, and I can't remember which one it was. It was like a 12-year or 15-year or what it was, but that had some really nice, delicate kind of fruity flavors to it as well. So anything that's going to be along those lines, that kind of delicate, creamy profile, a little bit of fruitiness to it. Some of that oak, those oaky notes, wooded notes, that's going to go really, really well. That's just my opinion.
No, I would agree. I mean, the obvious thing to point out here for our audience members who don't know is to be called Scotch, it has to be made in Scotland. I mean, and it seems kind of obvious, but I just want to point that out. If, for example, for bourbon, to be called bourbon, it has to be made in the U.S., so just as a heads up. But I think, you know, it's interesting because the Japanese have taken this style of whiskey making and they've really made it their own. I mean, you can definitely feel the Scottish whiskey influence, and it's not Irish whiskey and it's not Scottish whiskey. It's something completely different without being a completely separate beverage, if that makes any sense. So for me, I like Japanese whiskey for what it is. In most cases, it's really rich, it's really delicate, it's nuanced, and it's delicious. And I think, you know, from the people that I've known that have sort of made friends with in Japan, I think in general, the flavor preferences of Japanese in general is nuanced and soft and sort of subtle. They don't like super salty. They don't like super sweet. They like nuance. Like, if you look at a lot of the food that they make, like sushi, for example, they go for very subtle flavors, and that's a very Japanese style. So it's not surprising that their whiskey is just so soft and so delicate. But if you give it time and you spend some time with it, it's got so much going on. So I think Rob is absolutely right. I think, you know, this Connecticut Forte just begs to be paired with everything. You know, Yamazaki, the Nikka pure malts, the Hakushu would probably be outrageous with this, and of course the Migikyo is just a no-brainer.
Caught me after my first sip of my next pairing here, and somehow, holy crap, these keep just getting better.
Your third one is going to be a monster.
This is wow. Mm-hmm. It's really unfortunate, and I'm going to tell you what happened. There's a reason that I'm going to show you the bottle, and it's empty.
Oh no.
So for my third pairing, I'm going with a Taketsuru 21 year, this also comes out of Nikka, correct?
Yep.
And John will give
part
much
of the stable of distilleries.
Yeah, John will give much more background on it. It's round and generous, which is a great way to describe it. This 21-year-old Taketsuru bottling captures the hearts of both novices and experts alike, perfectly balanced and mellow. The endless finish lingers on, delivering a complex range of aromas from tropical fruit notes, from tropical fruits to nuts or mocha, which I don't get a lot of mocha. Well, maybe a little bit. With its four titles of World's Best Blended Malt Whiskey, or Blended Malt, in 2007, 9, 10, and 11, the Taketsuru 21 years is quite simply one of the great whiskeys of our time. So I had my poured everything out in the nice Glencairn glasses, and while I was doing something earlier, I don't know if you can see it, I ashed into this glass.
Oh no.
So yeah, that's a full pour. You can see it floating around in there. It's not a full pour. That's half a pour of Taketsuru 21 down the drain. Like, I tried to salvage it because they were big flakes. I tried to stick my finger in there and like get in that. It was no good. If I had some sort of filter thing, I could have tried to fix it, but it was screwed up. So, so I got blasted a little bit. But on the nose, it's just a full flavored nose. There's fruit, but it's nondescript, right? Like a fruit salad kind of nose. But I still come back to that honeydew melon, which I think is kind of a softer, sweeter fruit. Definitely some cream. There's a lot of oak on here as well. And it's just fantastic smelling. And the flavor, I'll get into more of the flavor after we get a chance. But John, do you want to talk a little bit more about this one? Because I know this one's near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, so I had this at a tasting, and I mean, obviously, it's named after Masataka Taketsuru, who is the founder of Japanese whiskey. And when I had it, I mean, that was my reaction. Your reaction was my reaction. I was like, this is, you know, and I can't say a bunch of the words because they're on the Unforced Radio Network, but it was, you know, absolutely outstanding. And I thought, well, you know, sometimes you take a first sip and you're, you know, you think it's better than it is, but the more I came back to it, the more it kept offering more and more and more. And by the end of the tasting, I went to Andrew of Kensington Wine Market, and I'm like, yeah, Andrew, I need a bottle of this. And I went home, and I said, Andrew, I called him up, and I'm like, this is really good. He goes, yeah, it's really good. And I said, I think I need a second bottle. And he goes, okay. If you need a second bottle, that's cool. You can buy a second bottle. So I bought two bottles. So I'm going to bring some more down with you because I have gobs of it. And it's not inexpensive. And this is where the funny part of the story goes. I was at a follow-up tasting about 3 months later. And they make a no-age statement version of this called the Taketsuru Pure Malt. And I thought, well, that'll be interesting to kind of compare and contrast. The Taketsuru Pure Malt is about 90% as good as the 21 at, I want to say, an eighth the price, maybe a tenth the price, if that gives you a sense of the ballpark. So I'm happy to own the 21, but I bought a bottle of the Taketsuru Pure Malt as well because it was just, I was like, well, that's, I mean, for the money that I've already spent, I might as well get this as well. So I might bring down a sample of each for you to kind of compare and contrast. But it's probably one of the best, maybe top three Japanese whiskeys that I've had. It's something else.
It's fantastic. And the flavor, They were saying the Fennett, it just keeps going. The flavor keeps going in it. And I don't know how it changes once it's not in your mouth anymore, but it's still impacting my palate and changing. There's so much fruit, and I don't know how else to say it other than that honeydew melon, that type of fruit, and maybe there's like some papaya and random fruits like that in there that the flavor's trending towards. But there's that oak that just kind of carries everything through, and it's almost savory up front. Like if, yeah. It almost, when it first hits your tongue, almost has kind of a savory flavor to it, and then it just melts away into that sweetness with that oak backbone. And holy, yeah. This is really, really, really good.
Expletive, expletive, expletive.
Indeed. Thank you for sharing, because this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Now I need to try to pair it. So
yeah,
I'll
you
be
need
back.
To try to pair it. So while you do that, I'm going to talk about, I kind of went in a different direction from my last one. This is the Nikkei Pure Malt. Now, this is the Pure Malt White, and you can see it's kind of got the little stubby bottle. This is how they come. And they have a couple different products. Now, normally this is really consumed in Japan. It's not, or at least it wasn't exported, but, you know, as all things whiskey are imported into Japan, there's been a growing trend for people to consume Japanese whiskey because, quite frankly, it's delicious. So they make a black, and they make a red, and they make a white. The white is my favorite of the three. The black is kind of my least favorite, and the red somewhere in the middle. And interestingly enough, and it's sort of not very intuitive, the darker the color, the less the peat. The lighter the color, the more the peat that's in it. So this is actually a peated whiskey, peated Japanese whiskey, and it's a vatted malt, which means they take single malt whiskey, they vat it together with unspecified amount of peated whiskey, and that's how they get their final result. So, of course, we've been talking about Nikkei. Nikkei is, of course, formerly Suntory. They have all of these stables of distilleries, and this one is... sorry, let me start over. Nikkei Whiskey was named in 1952, so it changed from Suntory to Nikkei. And some of the distilleries that are in there are Yoichi, which we've had on the show before. Yoichi is very tasty stuff. Honshu, which is, I think, closed now. And then, of course, Miyagikyo, which we've been talking about all night. And this is 43%. They say it's got an intense smoke, but, I mean, that's relative. If you've had Scottish whiskey that's peated, you're not going to find this quite smoky, probably very smoky for the Japanese palate. And they say that peat aromas dominate the Nikkei's pure malt, the pure malt's aromatic palate, it complemented by slightly salt and vegetal notes. I'm not sure if I'm getting that. A thrilling malt which will satisfy the boldest whiskey drinkers. It's one of the most heavily peated whiskey in the Nikkei range. It is definitely the most heavily peated whiskey in the Nikkei range because they don't really have a lot of peated whiskeys. And on the nose, you get a lot of that sort of... you know, the, I don't want to say burning tire, but it's like almost a creosote, but it's like a sweet creosote. And when I taste it, it's got that Japanese whiskey character in the sense that it's light, it's nuanced, it's delicate. And then out of nowhere, it's like, ba-bam, you just get that peated finish. But it's not what I would describe like a Laphroaig peat, where it's just like that just overwhelming peat. It's just got like a hint of peat, lingers in your palate for a minute, and it's gone. So I wouldn't put it in the same category as most of the Islay whiskeys in Scotland. It's very nuanced. It's going interesting with the cigar, and I'm going to take some more sips and take some more puffs, and I'll let you talk about how your pairing's going.
You know, it's going pretty well. It's tough because the Miyagikyo 15 paired perfectly. So it's fighting an uphill battle. I think this is a better whiskey, but the pairing isn't quite as good. The whiskey isn't really impacted by the cigar, which is interesting because I don't feel like any of the whiskeys were really impacted by the flavor of the cigar. I feel like they brought out different flavors from the cigar, which is just kind of odd. I don't feel like that's always the case. But the this Takatsuru, it's as much. I think it's just better on its own. It's almost too nuanced to bring in with this cigar. It makes the cigar taste a little bit flat. If that makes sense, it's bringing out these different kind of hay notes that weren't really there for me before. So, I mean, it's an okay pairing. It's the worst pairing of the night for me.
Which is not necessarily a bad
thing. Yeah, like relative. Yeah,
pretty good pairing night.
Yeah, relatively speaking, I think if I'm going to be sipping on some Takatsuro 21, that's all I'm doing. I'm not pairing it with anything else. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm just sitting there with the bottle, the glass. No, I'm just kidding. But I think I would want to. This is a special whiskey, at least to me, as far as the flavors are concerned, and the delicate balance and the nuance of the flavor in there. I don't want to mess with that. So I want to have this by itself. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm gonna sort of ask you to do some filler here because apparently I'm getting rained on right now. Ooh. So I'm gonna kind of make some adjustments to my setup here so I don't get short-circuited. I'll need about a minute. Thanks, Rob.
Okay, yeah, I'll jump in. We've got there's a question here from Jeff Madre, and Jeff, thanks for the question. I have no idea how much time we have left, but I think we're okay. He says, "Do you think serving whiskey different ways, neat on the rocks, etc., affects the way a particular whiskey might pair with a cigar? If so, how?" Now, I'll answer this question from a couple of different angles. Now, first, the way that you serve a whiskey absolutely makes a difference. Don't let anybody tell you that you're doing it wrong. If you want to put ice in your whiskey, put ice in your whiskey. It's your whiskey. You can do whatever the hell you want with it. You're going to impact the flavor, and John can talk about the scientific reasons behind the impact of that flavor. As we've been doing this show, we've been doing it for a few years now, I find that I don't put ice in anything anymore unless it's a cocktail. I just don't. Even if it's, maybe if it's a lower end bourbon, I will put a bigger ice cube in there and just let it kind of marinate and do its thing and just enjoy it. But for the most part, I'm drinking my whiskey neat, and I just feel like I get the most out of it. I feel like my journey through coffee was the same thing. You start with, when I started drinking coffee, it's lots of cream, lots of sugar. Now I'm only putting cream and sugar in the coffee if the coffee's crap. If your coffee sucks, then I'm going to doctor it up. But other than that, I'm drinking it straight. So I guess I kind of take the same approach with whiskey. Now, do I feel like it would impact the way that it would pair a cigar? Absolutely it would, because it's going to impact your palate and the way you're tasting things. Now, when I smoke a cigar, I stay away from things that have ice in them for the most part, because ice, it's going to, I'm going to say numb your palate a little bit, and I don't know if that's absolutely the correct way to say it, but that's just that's how it makes me feel a little bit. If I'm smoking a cigar and I'm just having water, it's just tepid water. I don't put ice in it. So I try to stay away from things that are too cold. Now, as far as impacting the way you're going to pair it, I'll echo what I said a second ago, which is a nice way of saying I'll repeat myself. It's definitely going to influence, absolutely. But that doesn't mean it's right or wrong. Now, as far as pairing, you know, like a straight whiskey or a straight bourbon or scotch, whatever, with a cigar, with ice, I don't think I've ever really done it. I probably have just on, you know, a weekend. I've got some buddies over, we're hanging out, and I'm having some bourbon and I throw an ice cube in there or whatever, just because it's warm out or whatever the case may be. But since we've started doing this show, I don't think I've done that. The only things that I've paired with cigars that have any ice in them would be a cocktail. And that's obviously going to impact the flavor of the cocktail, and the cocktail is going to have a lot more going on. And I actually wanted to talk to John about doing some more cocktail shows. I want to do a pre-prohibition cocktail show. I think that'd be fun. And even a prohibition cocktail show, which would be pretty gin heavy, which I don't know how well that's going to pair. Sounds like a Cameroon show. But anyway, so Jeff, just to answer that question. Yeah, I mean, for me, when I'm drinking my booze and I'm drinking the good stuff or just about anything, I'm going neat. And that's the deal. John, you okay over there?
Well, you know, getting completely rained out, but
it's all right.
Such is the problem with having an outdoor studio is there's unfortunately not much I can do. The forecast did not call for rain. So as long as the rain is falling straight down, we are good. But when the rain is not falling straight down, it is not good. So when we do our break here, I'm going to have to grab an umbrella because I'm getting doused. But I would completely agree with your statement. I think the problem with ice is that it completely drowns out your palate and makes it soft. So I'm going to have to throw it back to you for another minute here while I run inside and grab an umbrella, Rob. Thanks.
How much time do we have left?
We are down to 6 minutes.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks.
Okay, so Jeff, that's my answer on the question there. I'm gonna freestyle a little bit on Japanese whiskey here, because I really didn't know much about Japanese whiskey, and I still don't, compared to what John knows. And John's kind of he's like an encyclopedia at times, which is great. You know what? Since Jeff asked another question, and it must have just popped up. So, and it's right along with what I was talking about, so I'll just jump in. It says, what are 2 to 3 whiskeys, Japanese whiskeys, that you would recommend for people to explore if you're interested in trying Japanese whiskeys? Now, I would say go back to, I think we've done 2 or 3 Japanese whiskey shows, and go back and check those out. I would go with the basics, and I'm going to have to do some, like a Yamazaki 12, I think is pretty basic. And there's another one that I've got the Hibiki. Yeah, Hibiki 12 is also a nice one. Although I think their new one now is the Hibiki Harmony, because they don't really do the age statements anymore. So the Hibiki 12, I think, is not quite as easy to find anymore. But there's the Yamazaki 12, Hibiki 12. I'm just looking through some of these here. The Miyagikyo single malt is pretty basic. I think the Suntory Hakushu, which I know we've done on the show here before, the 12-year, those are all pretty relatively available locally for you. I know at Costco...
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize I took myself off mute there, Rob.
You're fine. At my local Costco, they've got the... they have the Hibiki Harmony. They have the... Hakushu 12-year. They have both of those available at Costco. So if you can get them at Costco, you know, they're pretty, it's pretty basic.
Hakushu is outstanding. I mean, that's a great whiskey for the price.
That one, if memory serves, it had a lot of that green apple influence in it, I think, and John shaking his head, yes. And I'd almost say the same thing to someone who wants to get into Scotch. Go with the big names and go with the basic stuff. Glenfiddich, or Glenfiddich, or whatever, however you say it, Glenfiddich 12, the Glenlivet 12, just kind of the basic stuff, the Macallan 10, Talisker Storm is so good, but that's, you know, maybe a little bit pricier. But
a little bit pricier.
Yeah, you find that stuff in that price range, in the $60 to $80 price range, or $50 to $80 price range, which, I mean, it's not cheap, but you're getting a full bottle that's going to last you about a year or so. And just to put it into perspective, this Takatsuru 21, it looks like it was between $200 and $250 a bottle. So yeah, I'm the lucky guy who gets to taste all this stuff, and John's the guy who makes that happen. So that's pretty awesome for me. But yeah, I mean, those would be, and I don't know if John, you would have some different ways or some different Japanese whiskeys that you might want to throw out there for people to try. And I don't know if you heard, but the question was. What are 2 or 3 Japanese whiskeys that you would recommend for people interested in exploring Japanese whiskeys? Kind of like an intro.
Yeah, and you were saying the Hibiki and the Hakushu, and I think those are all. I mean,
and the Yamazaki 12.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this is, you know, not to meant to slam the Scotch whiskey industry, but I think for me, I think a lot of Japanese whiskey is a lot more approachable, even as a 12-year, than a lot of Scotch whiskey is as a 12-year,
yeah.
If that makes sense. So, like, I love 12-year Scotch whiskey, but I feel like Japanese whiskey at 12 years tends to be a lot more complex. Now, granted, there's a bit of sometimes a price discrepancy, but, I mean, if you give me, for example, Glenlivet 12, which I love, and a Hakushu 12... I would take the bottle of the Hakushu 12 and I would down it all day long.
It's, yeah, you're right. Like, when you say it's a bit more complex, it's almost a bit more delicate, and it's the kind of, it would almost be, those would be the best way that I would say to get someone introduced to Scotch, really, is through Japanese whiskey and then bring them over to Scotch, because especially those 12-year Scotches, they're not as smooth. They've got a little bit more kick to them. I mean, for me, making that transition from bourbon to Scotch, and really, I did it because my father-in-law is a big Scotch drinker, and I didn't like Scotch. And I tried really hard to like Scotch, and he poured me a big glass when we were out there visiting, and I can't remember what it was. And yes, it had ice in it. It wasn't anything It was a blend. I want to say it was...
like a Johnny Walker?
No, it wasn't Johnny Walker. It was like... Blend, I think it was Talamore. Is it Talamore Dew? Is that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was one of their more basic bottles. And I actually, by the time I got through it, I enjoyed it, which is kind of similar to the way that I fell in love with Lagavulin. And God bless my father-in-law, we were out visiting this past, a couple weeks ago when we went on our trip, and he had a bottle of Laphroaig in there.
Oh, wow.
just because he knew that I liked it. He's like, I hate this stuff, and I can't understand how you drink it, but there's a bottle there, so help yourself. But he's the kind of guy that they had just moved into a new house, and we were going through different cabinets, and I go into one cabinet, and I find half a case of Glenfiddich 18. That
wow.
It's like he didn't even know that it was in there.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, well, if that's how you roll, then that's how you roll. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's a good question, Jeff. And I think that, and again, thank you for asking so many questions. Came in handy tonight. But I think that's probably the way to go, man. And if you're lucky enough to have a place near you that does any kind of tastings, look for a Japanese whiskey tasting, or maybe even request one, and see what happens.
Yeah.
I know my local BevMo does some tastings. They do more wine and beer, but occasionally they do spirit tastings. And I know they've done some Japanese whiskey tastings because it's just so damn popular.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I think the, you know, beyond the fact that tastings are usually quite inexpensive, it's a great way to sort of get into a bunch of different spirits that you may not otherwise like, and you may not like it after you taste it, but then you're not in for the bottle for it's $75, $85, $100, whatever dollars. So it's tastings to me are a great way to approach spirits for sure.
Which, absolutely, it's the best way to do it. It really is.
And so that takes us to the end of our Armed Forces Radio Network segment. Thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners that are out there. Hope you are in the world staying safe. Guys and girls, wherever you are stationed, hope you've been entertained by our hour of smoking and drinking, because we sure were. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. So that was interesting. Yeah, I'm just sitting here, and I kind of look up, and I see the sky is, you know, pitcher than black, as they say, and I went, well, it doesn't look good, but, you know, there's no forecast for rain, so it should be fine, and I didn't have my umbrella out here, and it just started coming down, and fortunately, most of the stuff I've got is kind of under a table, so it's insulated, but I mean, my keyboard got soaked, and my mouse got soaked, so that's, you know, just some of the sacrifices we make for our listeners out there. Fortunately, fortunately, the whiskey didn't get any water in it. And that's, you know,
that's prioritize. It's not like you dropped your ash in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so let's go back to this. So the Takatsuru 21,
yeah,
and the Takatsuru Pure Malt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I need to Google here, is Takatsuru Pure Malt.
Yeah, it's super affordable. Like, I think in the States, it might only be $60 or $70 a bottle.
Let me see if I can find it.
It's, I mean, the only downside to that is it's like you could crush a bottle in a single session. It's that, I mean, it's like, and now that you've had the Takatsuru 21, having the Takatsuru Pure Malt, I'm sure you would taste it and go, yeah, this is like Takatsuru 21 light. I mean, it lacks a little bit of the complexity, but for the money, it's pretty damn close. I mean, you know, you don't have to pay $330 a bottle. You're pretty happy to, you know, pay $70 or $80 a bottle.
Yeah, it looks like it's $59.
Yeah, that's insane.
And K&L Wine Merchants, wherever the hell they are, seems to have it. That's now that I would, just based on what you've said, I would buy that bottle blind.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, if you like the Takatsuru 21, you will definitely like the Takatsuru Pure Malt.
And I'd love to have a bottle of the 21. I feel like it's out of my price range. But
I have two bottles.
But if you want to offload one, let me know. If you can point me in the direction of a bottle of that Megikyo 15, that may be something that I'll have to look up. But this Takatsuru Pure Malt, this is definitely going to happen. And we're gonna make sure that this happens.
I feel like that's a bottle that Dana would really like, because I know, and this is so funny because. Laura gets teased when we go to scotch tasting. She's not a scotch drinker. She does not like scotch at all. I've tried quite a range, and she's just not her jam. But she really enjoys Irish whiskey, and we just came home with a really, really rich pot still single cask Irish whiskey from her last tasting. It's really good stuff. But she went to a Japanese whiskey tasting and loved it. Like, she, like, and of course, that was the tasting where she had the Chichibu. And, you know, she talks about peated whiskey clearing the room. Like, she'll literally leave the room. And she's like, oh, this is really good. And I'm like, I don't understand. It's heavily peated. It's heavily peated. And you like it. She's like, yeah, no, it's really good. So,
you're a paradox.
Funny. Yeah. You're supposed to hate this. What? So, yeah, she really likes the all the Japanese whiskey, and, you know, big fan. And like I said, that Takatsura Pure Malt is that one's probably, as long as it's in stock, that's probably going to be a regular stock item for my Scotch shelf in the house for sure.
Yeah, Dana, she likes the, and it's funny, she doesn't always listen to our show, spoilers, but I made sure that she listened to the show with Tony Bellotto, because it talks a lot about wine and Dana loves wine. And now it seems like there's always a corked bottle of wine on our countertop now. It's not in the fridge anymore. It's staying on the counter. And he's right, man. It lasts. We haven't let it last for a week, but I think that's definitely, we're going to do an experiment for Mixed and Mashed here pretty soon.
Nice.
And Whiskey Wednesdays on Mixed and Mashed are going to pop up here pretty soon too, which that's been about a year in the works, but we're going to talk about that offline here pretty soon. But she loves bourbon. She's on a big rye kick. I mean, she loves rye, and it's got that extra spice to it. And I think she likes a spicier spirit than, because, you know, a lot of scotch isn't really, it's got a little bit of spice, but not too much. It's a different kind of spice, if you will. I mean, when you go with that, like a sherry bomb, like, God, when you talk about a sherry bomb, I'm just, oh, that's what I love sherry bombs. Yeah. But, and it's got a spice to it, but it's a different kind of spice. It's not that same bourbon spice, because that bourbon spice will get you.
Yeah.
I mean, that reaches up and grabs you, like the way that you felt just before the show started. And she likes that. So, I mean, our rye collection has steadily been growing. I mean, we've got a bottle of a Willett Estate Reserve 7-year rye that was given to her as a gift, which is a really nice bottle. We picked up a bottle of Angel's Envy rye, which is, it's expensive for rye, but it's really good. It's really, really good. The depth of flavor in that is really, really good. But Dana was actually the one who turned me on to Japanese whiskey to begin with.
Oh, that's funny.
We have some friends who were kind of into it, and we ended up going to one of the local spots, and I probably told this story before, but the bartender was actually from Nicaragua, so he and I had a lot to talk about.
Wow.
And he would always pour us all these different tastings, and they had a ton of different stuff. So every Japanese whiskey that they had there, we were tasting, which they had a very basic selection now that I know a little bit more about it. But this was, you know, 3 years ago, so it was probably a cutting edge selection at the time. But Dana does like that, so I think that that Takatsura Pure Malt is going to find its way into our bar for sure. Dana's the same way. She's not a big Scotch drinker. She'll drink it if this fan makes a lot of noise. She'll drink it, but that's not what she goes for on a regular basis.
Fair enough. So we've got some interesting show lineups over the coming weeks. You guys have Miami Cigar Company on tomorrow night with Jason Wood. That'll be a good show. Seth and Yellow Snapper return on Monday with Jose Blanco. And anytime you can sit down with Jose Blanco, I don't even really care what you're talking about at that point. As long as Jose Blanco's on the show, I'm going to tune in and watch. I don't have us scheduled for next Wednesday. I need to look at the baseball schedule and see where we sit for that. But I'm sure we'll have a show one way or the other. Just not sure what that show is. And then one I'm excited for, and I'm going to be out of town for, which is a super bummer. You guys have Juan Cancel and Bill Ives on from Protocol.
Cubaquino!
Cubaquino! Yeah,
we said different words there. Did you notice that?
Cubaquino, yeah.
Cubaquino.
Cubaquino?
Cubaquino.
Cubaquino.
Nyo. Nyo at the end.
Cubaquino.
There you go. You got it.
I love their cigars. And I'm super excited to try their Lancero, and they've got that new release, which I don't know if they're gonna have any left because I think that was an exclusive. But
they got one with a red band on it. I don't know. I can't keep up. There's so much new stuff going on, but that'll be a fun show. I'm looking next week. I will be at the ballpark. The Boston Red Sox are in town, but we could maybe pre-record on Monday.
Heyo.
And I'd like to do a pre-prohibition cocktail show.
I'd be down with that. I mean, we haven't done a cocktail show in a while. I know we wanted to get Paul on for one of the cocktail shows, but that doesn't prevent us from doing a second or third cocktail show.
Pre-prohibition cocktails are like the hipster deal right now. Like that's they're in, and well, at least that's what Dana tells me. And I don't know what many of them are, but I think we should do a pre-prohibition and a prohibition, because there's a lot of prohibition cocktails, but most of them are gin-based. So that could be interesting as far as gin pairing with cigars.
So. Especially because I hate gin, so.
No, gin's good, man. You just have to do it right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that works out. I just came off a big road trip, 8 days, and the more I go on the road trips, the more I have so much respect for the guys in the industry who go out and do, like, you know, 13-day stretches. Honestly, guys, I don't know how you do it and stay in a relationship or stay. I mean, I'm pretty sure that I put on 4 pounds in 8 days, which I don't, like, the math of that doesn't work out. Because even if I was eating an extra 1,000 calories a day, it doesn't make sense to me. But I'm pretty beat, so I'm owed a couple days at least, you know, I could more than certainly take Monday off, and we could do a pre-record show, which I think would be a lot of fun. Like I said, you know, the thing for me, you've got this really awesome cocktail bar. I have, like, nothing for cocktails, so I can, like, you know, spend the weekend, do a little bit of research, get set up with all my muddles and all that stuff that I need to make that happen. And
the nice thing about pre-prohibition cocktails is most of them are pretty simple.
I like simple.
Yeah. And it's if we're talking about you're doing a gin cocktail or a bourbon, a lot of them are gin and bourbon. Like that's mainly what you're going to run into. And I know you don't like gin, so you probably don't have much in the house.
Well, so it's funny you should say that because Laura loves gin. I mean, that is like, scotch is my jam. Gin is her jam. So we have, like, I want to say 3 or 4 bottles of gin in the house.
Interesting. So there's something that I'm going to have to track down, and I'll bring some so you can bring it back to Laura because I'd be curious to see what she would think of it. There's a distiller here in the Bay Area, and I can't remember their name, but they were aging gin in different types of barrels.
Ooh.
And they had a gin that they aged in bourbon barrels, so it was kind of a clearish brown.
Interesting.
And it was, I like gin. I don't drink it straight. Mm-hmm. I like gin cocktails. I like a Tom Collins or a Gin Ricky or something. I like when I'm having, especially this time of year. I mean, Tom Collins is on steady redial at the house. I'm a big fan. And I was over the holiday. I had one on Monday. And then I started playing around and I did a Tom Collins. Now, for those of you who don't know, Tom Collins is a very basic cocktail. It is gin, lemon juice, and simple syrup, and that's it. Hmm. And then you top it off with a club soda. So it's very, very simple. It's very refreshing. It's fruit-forward. A Gin Ricky is basically the same thing, but with lime. And I did a Tom Collins, so I did it the same way, but I muddled about 10 to 12 blueberries in my glass.
Interesting.
So it gave it a nice color and a little bit more sweetness to it.
Okay.
It was a little bit feminine of a drink, but I enjoyed it. I could get after it with it. Then I switched to the Old Cuban, which is that's one of my favorite cocktails of all time. And that is an aged rum. So I used Zaya, which I managed to find a couple of bottles that didn't suck, so I bought those. It's aged rum, lime juice, muddled mint, and simple syrup. So it's almost like a mojito, but it's like the cross between a mojito and a daiquiri. It's actually quite tasty. And I don't know if we've used that on a show to pair with cigars or not, but I think it would be very, very good pairing.
I'm pretty sure we have not, and you know, I could certainly make a super authentic Old Cuban because I have like 5 different bottles of Cuban rum.
There you go. So yeah, you could nail it. You could nail it. That would be legit.
Yeah, so it sounds like we're going to be doing a cocktail show. I think now we just need to figure out what cigar we want to use and abuse for that pairing show.
Let's do a poll. Maybe do a poll on SigFed and see what votes we get.
Could do a poll on SigFed, and I think Twitter supports polling as well.
Yeah, there you go. Let's let the people speak.
I mean, they were the same people. What was that god-awful concoction pairing that they came up with? It was just terrible. I don't remember, but I blame our audience. I know you're not supposed to do that. It's not professional, but I blame our audience. It was terrible. But no, I like that idea. I'll get that set up for tomorrow.
We'll get toasted Monday afternoon. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what people do, right? They just get hammered and smoke cigars on a Monday afternoon.
Yep.
Yeah. So, appreciate everyone who tuned in live. And if you're listening through podcast, please, we appreciate your support. Go to podcastawards.com. Vote for Cigar Federation on the Games and Hobbies. We need your vote every day. I know it's a lot of work, but when we make that big cup, it'll be super worth it. And appreciate everyone, all your questions. And make sure to email the show, rob@cigarfederation.com, surgeon@cigarfederation.com. And thanks for all our live listeners and your questions. We'll tune in next week. We'll have a great cocktail show. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll get toasted on Monday afternoon. You'll enjoy it. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less.